messaging each other about their guy they just saw walk down the hallway or whatever, and then it's a blessing to have these girls in church singing for the Lord. I appreciate that a whole lot better than what I was doing when I was a teenager. And what a blessing that is to me. Appreciate that, girls. Brother Sam, you know the drill. Come on up. Shoot at us, and when you run out of shells, put the gun down and let me have it back.
Share the love.
Oh, amen.
Amen, amen. Well, it's good to be saved, isn't it? Amen. That's good to be in church, isn't it? If you didn't think about it, I'm sure it's got to be something else. All right, I'm going to mention just a couple more things about the book table because there's a rumor that some of you still have money left. This book, I did not write, we published this book, but that is one of the best all-round Bible study books that I've ever seen. Brother Womack put it together. I just read the table of contents on them because that tells you about what you're going to get, and this has just been a tremendous help to a lot of folks. There's a section on chapter on repentance, Trinity of God and man, necessity for salvation, understanding salvation, the baptism of the Holy Spirit, walking in the Spirit, a study on faith, understanding prayer, forgiveness, the armor of God, Christian suffering, dispensations, the deity of Jesus Christ, which Bible is God's book, is the Bible true, a study on water baptism, eternal security, all about hell, facts about tongues, about separation, soul winning, what about tithing, healing, the rapture, Christian judgment, the Antichrist, the millennium, white throne judgment. There's a chart on future prophecy. There's a section on the world, one on the flesh, one on the devil, addictions, capital punishment, characteristics of God, sound doctrine, gossip and slander. This is not a how-to chapter. Homosexuals, neither is that. Two creations, fact or fiction, defeating your Goliath, imaginations and fantasies. That has just been a real help to a lot of folks. And so it may be a blessing to you. And then this one, there's two sets back there. This is, I think one is red by Brother Walker. And these are basic Bible doctrines and a little bit thinner format. Those may be a blessing to you. And then I didn't say anything yet, but the Fight On book. This is the second one. And here's what I say, guys. There's no other way to say this. Our country used to exalt heroes. We used to exalt heroes, and our kids grew up wanting to be heroes. But today, our country exalts victims. Everybody's been cheated. Everybody's been, abused. Everybody's had a tough life. And so everybody wants to be a victim. And if you want to be a victim, I'm not your guy. All right? If you need somebody to come in, pat your hand and tell you how rough life has been on you, you don't need me. I'm sure the government has an 800 number you can call. Someone will come, they'll slap your dad, they'll slap your mom, sue your dad, and give you a check. But if you want to keep on going, I'll do anything I can to keep you going. Okay? I appreciate anybody that just keeps on going. There are actually two illustrations from this book that will be in the message site. That's just an example, guys. They're not long stories, okay? So whoever's going to read this to you, it shouldn't take long. But I just appreciate anybody that keeps on going. And so those are back there. And I think if you don't have either one and want both of them, I think Kathy will give you a deal. I think she adds 20% handling or something. I didn't say anything about the posters, but the posters are back there. I was telling somebody, I like football. And as far as football is concerned, I like to watch the Buckeyes beat Michigan. Yeah. Anyway, but... I don't know why I look back there. I just thought of that. But, if the Buckeyes beat Michigan, I'm like happy for about 5 minutes. And then I forget about it. And if the Buckeyes lose, Michigan wins, I'm sad for about 5 minutes. And then I forget about it. You know why? Because it's just a stupid game. All right? And what kills me, it used to be that the problem with sports figures were that they were, they were like arrogant or proud or conceited. And now the problem with sports figures are they're murderers and rapists and dope dealers. And that's not so bad. You say, I think that's awful. No, that's not awful. What's awful is then some Christian father will pin one of those guys' picture on his kid's bedroom wall, hoping he grows up to be like him. And if he's not careful, he will. So we have the posters back there. They're just a little bit, something better for the wall. And also we've got those in postcard form. There's 15 different pictures in there. So if you're too cheap to get the posters, why don't you get them all at once? Now, I want to say this about the book table. Two things I want to say about it. Kathy is going to pack that up about 10 minutes after service. So if you do want something, You'll want to get back there and get it as quickly as you can, or at least just throw money back there and we'll grab it. And then the second thing is, now she won't need help packing it up. I know everybody's going to say, let me help you pack it up. And she does. She does a running inventory when she packs it. And if somebody helps her, it messes her up. I don't even help her. I just stand there and go, faster, Kathy, come on, hurry up, faster, Kathy. But anyway, so she'll pack it up. And when it's all done, if I can get some guys to help me carry it out the truck. By helping me, I mean, let me watch you do it. Okay? I carry crutches. My neck is okay. My low back is no good anyways. Never was. And I carry crutches with me. And the last time I picked up a half a box of books, I ended up on crutches for about 4 or 5 weeks. So I can pick up a box and probably be okay. And then I can pick up a box and end up messed up. And so I'd just rather you pick up the box and be messed up. So so if you want something from the book table, you want to grab it quickly. And then if I can have some guys... give me a hand, load it in the truck, and we'll get that done. All right, open your Bibles to James chapter 4. Isn't it good to be saved? We use the term lost, as in not saved, about the lost world, about the people who are not saved. But boy, is our world not, we say lost, but I think the world is like lost in capital letters, flashing off and on. Isn't that right? I mean, you talk about people that just couldn't find their way, couldn't find their feet with a flashlight and a roadmap. I mean, that is the world. And it is just good to be saved. That's not my message. I just want to tell you that. James chapter 4, verse 14 says, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. Let's bow our heads and let's talk to the Lord. Father, it is good to be saved. God, it is. It is always good to be saved. God, help us to appreciate what you did for us. You know, somebody said that when people get something they didn't pay much for, they think it's not worth much. God, we didn't pay for our freedom. It was paid for with the blood of many, many people that we have no idea who they were and what they suffered. God, we didn't pay for our salvation. It was paid for by the blood of your only begotten Son. God, I pray that we would always remember the great price that was paid for our souls. Help us, God, to keep that in our minds, because I fear the country, the direction our country is going. And when dark days come, God, help us to remember that it is just good to be saved. So, Father, bless these folks for coming to church tonight and accomplish your will in each life represented. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen. Now, it says there, and I'm sure that's not the first time you ever saw that verse, that your life is a vapor. That's what I talked about. I want to talk about this. You ever talk to a salesman, and they give you some kind of a deal, and you say, well, let me think about this. And they go, oh, no, this is your one chance to get this deal. It's available tonight, but after this, you don't get this opportunity again. You ever have all those guys? And then 2 days later, he calls you and gives that chance again. the guy comes by with an $800 or a $200 sweeper and wants to sell it to you for $800, but he's willing to give it to you tonight for $400. And you say, well, no, I'm going to pass on that. And so a couple days later, he goes, well, okay, but I'll give you another chance. I mean, I hate to say this, and I'm not overly down on our culture, but we are good at commercialism. Oh, this is your one chance, and you've got like 91 chances. Isn't that right? Well, I'm going to talk to you tonight about your one chance. I mean, every single person here has one chance, not two, one and one only. Every person does have one. And I'm going to talk to you tonight about your one chance, and I hope to impress upon you the opportunity that you have, because you will never have this opportunity again. But let me explain what one chance is. I think it's this airplane here. Is a B-24. That was a World War II bomber. And there's a story in here about a pilot of a B-24. And what happened is, over Germany, during the confusion of a bomb run, they dropped their bombs or whatever, and you got, flak going off and light sweeping the sky and all this, ours were daylight raids, actually. And what happened was, at 10,000 feet, two B-24s came together. They hit in midair over Germany. Now, I don't know if you ever thought about that, because I don't know if you ever thought. But when something like that happens, there's 10 guys per plane. Not everybody dies as a direct result of the crash. what happens is that you got two planes totally disintegrated, and you have got like eight engines and all of the stuff with two planes, and 20 guys that may have lived through this who are going to die when they hit the earth. Now, in a fighter in World War II, the pilot of a fighter always wore his parachute because he didn't have any place to put it, didn't have a chance to put it on. And actually, he sat on it. It was the seat that he sat on so he could pull the canopy back, jump out, you know, he's already got the parachute on. Not in a bomber. They had parachutes on board, but they thought, well, you know, the bomb's going to get hit. We're going to have a few minutes to throw a parachute on. Well, when that hit, nobody had a chance to put a parachute on. But one guy lived. The pilot of one plane lived. And the way this guy lived, here's the story he told. He said he is falling to his death. Now, you understand, he's falling from 10,000 feet amidst the rubble of two entire planes. I mean, engines, wheels, pieces of aluminum, you know, seats, whatever. And he said he is falling to his death, and he said he looked over, and right here was a parachute. I mean, right there. Now, that guy has got one chance, doesn't he? You know, I don't know about you, my luck, I would go. And he'd go, and he said, I reached over and grabbed the strap. And he said, while he's tumbling through the air, he put that parachute on the best he could, pulled the ripcord, saved his life. Would you call that one chance? If he'd missed, you think he'd had a second one? Not in your life, not in his life. Guys, what I'm saying is that is one chance. And I'm going to talk to you tonight because just as surely as he had only one chance that day, you have one chance, and that's what I'm going to talk to you about. But the first thing that I need to talk to you about is how important you are. You're not. Now, you need to hear that. Americans, oh, people in general just have an idea, you know, well, I'm just so important. Don't you know who I am? No. I told you I don't challenge often, but I'll give you a little challenge. Here's what I want you to do. Go to a graveyard where you know someone that is buried there and walk to their grave. That's all. Park your car, get out of it, and walk to their grave. That's all you got to do. And I will bet that most likely, from your car to their grave, you will walk past the graves of about 10 to 12 people who were born, lived, and died that you didn't even know existed. That's how important they were. And someday, if the Lord tarries, they're going to bury me or they're going to bury you. And somebody's going to walk to somebody else's grave where somebody's buried that they know. And when they make that walk, they're going to walk past about 10 or 12 graves of people that were born, lived, and died that they never knew existed. And you and I will be one of those people that they walk past. We are so important that most of us will be dead about 2 weeks before anybody finds out. Okay? And we get this idea, you know, really, we got this idea like, well, you know, don't you know that I'm here? I come into Baptist churches. You know, the two things Baptists love to do more than anything is eat and vote. Oh, man. Eat is good. Vote, I'm not too keen on. Vote's all right. You get people go, well, you know, they pay in the bathroom. Nobody asked me my opinion. That's because nobody cared about your opinion. You know, we knew the value of your opinion and thought, eh. But, you know why they put you to sleep when they operate on you? You say, so you don't hurt. No. They could give you a local. They could keep you awake and give you a local and operate on you. The reason they put you to sleep is so that you don't question the doctor as to if you're doing it right or not. Well, doctor, is that, you think that's right? Okay, well, doc, you think that's big enough? That gives me... I mean, it's knocked the guy out. Now, here's what I want you to think about. In eternity, what it looks like, as best we know, God has taken a 7,000-year parenthesis. Think, and as near as we can tell, we have gone 6,000 years through it, correct? And look how much God got done before you and I showed up. And actually got it done right. He probably got it done early just so that before we showed up, lest we tell him how to do it. But you know, God spoke the universe into existence. I was talking to a guy one time. You ever talk to an evolutionist? You know, they won't say this. They won't say, well, I believe in evolution and you believe in creation. They never say it that way. They always, if they sense that you believe in creation, they will ask you if you believe in creation, but they'll ask you, like, if you dare say yes, you are just the dumbest thing on earth. And they had me, who fixed me up with this guy who was a physicist, a PhD, and we're talking, And so I was talking to him, and I told him, about creation and everything else. But here's what he said. When I said I believe in creation, he said this, just like this. He goes, "You really believe that God just spoke the universe into existence in 7 24-hour days?" And he said, I knew if I dared say yes, he would think I was the dumbest thing on two legs. So I said, no. Six. I think he spoke it into existence in 6 24-hour days. That's exactly what I believe, yes. If God created anything on the seventh day, it was iced tea. Because he was just kicking back and enjoying what he just done for the last week, all right? But God got all of that done without you and without me. Isn't that true? When Lucifer rebelled, I wasn't there. Man, am I glad. I probably got blamed. But I was not there, all right? When God brought the flood, one of the things I tell people that I like about our God, I was telling you this morning some things I like about him. One of the things I like about him, you've got to admit, God has a flair for the dramatic, does he not? I mean, he really does. In Genesis chapter 7, he looked down on this earth and he said, "I'm going to kill them. I'm just going to kill them all. Noah and his family, rest of them are dead." And I can just see Michael. Michael is the archangel. Listen, there's two prominent angels, Michael and Gabriel. If you study your Bible, Michael is the soldier. He's the killer. Gabriel is the talker. All these guys would say, "An angel talked to me." Well, Michael came and talked. Michael don't come and talk. Unless he says, "Goodbye." All right? So if an angel ever appears to you, ask his name. If it says Michael, it's all over, bucko, okay? I'm telling you, Michael's a killer. And I can just see Michael, man, drawing his sword, call his troop. "Come on, guys, let's go down and kill him." And God says, whoa, what are you doing? "Well, you said you want them all dead, we'll go down and kill him." "Oh, wait a second. I want to do something different." "What are you going to do?" "You have some rain. You know how I got the water coming up from the ground? Well, this time it's going to come down from the sky. And I'm going to do it for 40 days and 40 nights. I'm going to kill everybody there." So it's more fun. And you know what God did? He killed everybody but 8 people. Isn't that right? By the way, I wasn't there. And you weren't there. I wasn't there. You weren't there. Your parents weren't there. Your grandparents weren't there. Your great-grandparents weren't there. You weren't even a thought at that time. Is that true? But I told you, our God has a flair for the dramatic. And so you get about 9, 10 chapters after that. He looks down at Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, Zeboim, Zoar, and "I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him." And I can see Michael going, "Okay, guys, open up the water valves." And God said, whoa, what are you doing? "Well, you said you're going to kill him." "Well, I am going to kill him." "Well, we drowned him last time." "That was last time. I already did water. Well, what are you going to do this time?" I'll come up with something. You ever seen fire and brimstone from heaven? This is kind of like fireworks in reverse. Isn't that right? Man, I mean, that's what happened. And he killed him. All God. Hey, listen. One time he got mad at Israel when they were in the wilderness, and he said, "I'm going to kill him." Michael said, "Water? Fire and brimstone? Snakes. Oh, you watch those Jews dance when these snakes bite them." Isn't that what he did? But guys, when all of those things took place, you were not there, and I was not there. In Genesis chapter 12, the Bible tells us that God chose Abraham. He said he was going to, I get this stuff. Let me give you a thought, all right? We're not really, we think left wing is bad, so the right wing is good. Can I tell you what's wrong with the right wing? Right wing and left wing, they're both flapping on the same bird. That's the truth. If you see an eagle and he is out here like this, now his wing tips are as far from each other as they possibly can be. Isn't that true? You talk to somebody on the left wing, and now here we disagree with the people on the left wing in every case. It's like they think that killing babies is okay, and we think killing criminals is okay. They think gun control is taking your gun away from you and keeping theirs. We believe gun control is hitting what you aim at. All right? And you move closer and closer, but those wings, this wing tip, they're as far as they can be from each other. But they both join at the same place. You know what leftists and rightists, you know what liberals and conservatives, the one thing they agree on? They both hate Israel. Those liberals hate Israel, and those conservatives hate Israel. Guys, I'm not going to be left or right. I'm going to be with God. And here's what you got. God chose Abraham. Because I had somebody say, well, the Jews are running everything. I said, you're right. That's the way Deuteronomy told us it was going to be. God said the Jews are going to run everything. I'd rather the Jews be running it than the Muslims. You have found out what happens when the Catholics run everything. Isn't that right? It was called the Dark Ages and the Inquisition. So I don't think I want them running it. I'm not even keen on the Democrats. So guys, God chose Abraham. You know what's amazing about Abraham? He has got three lineages that are still with us today. From him came Isaac, Jacob, who is Israel, and the children of Israel are direct line from him. And then from him came Ishmael. Well, you talk about a mistake haunting you the rest of your life. The Arabs come from that line. We don't come from either one of those physical lines, but according to Romans chapter 4, if you believed on Jesus Christ, you've had the same faith of Abraham, and we are spiritually his children. But guys, when God chose Abraham, you were not there, and I was not there. And you read in the Old Testament and Israel, and the 12 tribes, and then they got them a king, Saul, and Saul united them as a nation. Then they got another king, David, and he made them a great kingdom. Then they got another king, Solomon, he made them a world empire. And when all of that took place, you weren't there, I was not there. 40 years wandered in the wilderness, you weren't there, I wasn't there. Then the decline of Israel, it's scary and eerie how similar it is to our country. I mean, they came up, and then when they just kept denying God and living for themselves, they went down. Guys, until we turn back as a nation to God, we are doomed. It's not the economy, stupid. But all those things took place. You were not there, and I was not there. 39 books in this Old Testament. 39 books. Guys, the ink was long dry. They were long gone from the face of this earth before you and I ever showed up. Isn't that true? Yeah. And then, not just what took place in the Bible, but history. 1492, Columbus discovered America. I love to say that. I love to say that because I know somewhere somebody goes, there were already people here. Yeah, but they weren't doing much with it. And Columbus came over here. Now, guys, I was raised in public education. You know what that means? I was lied to 5 days a week. You know what they told me about Christopher Columbus? They said he came over here and he was interested in gold. You ought not to lie about the dead. Unfortunately for the liars, Christopher Columbus wrote a book. His book was called The Book of the Prophecy, in which he wrote in his native Portuguese, he said that God had called him to take the gospel to a people who had never heard it. So maybe the king and queen of Spain were interested in gold, but Christopher Columbus had a little higher standard. You know what they told me in public school? They said he came over here 4 times and never knew where he'd been. Now think of that concept. I mean, you're going to sail toward the edge of the earth 4 times, all right? You know he left with 4 ships. Ever since the Pinta, the Nina, and the Santa Maria, but he had 4. Remember the one that went off the edge? But he came here 4 times, and they said he didn't know where he'd been. And forgive me, I've often carried on an imaginary conversation with Christopher Columbus between his third and fourth voyage. I see him on the street of Madrid, and I go, "Hey, Chris, how you doing?" "Good." "Hey, where you been?" "I don't know." "Ah, so what are you going to be doing?" "Going back." "Where?" "I don't know." "Won't come with me?" "No, I'm not going to bump with a guy that doesn't know where he's been." So he came over here, guys. He came over here and 1492. But when that happened, you weren't here, were you? You weren't born. I wasn't born. Your parents weren't born. Your grandparents weren't born. Think about it. You know, parents get married and they say, "We're going to have children." You know, parents don't get married and say, "We're going to have grandchildren." "We're going to have children, so we're going to have grandchildren." Nobody plans their grandchildren. You only plan your children. So in 1492, you weren't even a thought because your parents weren't alive, your grandparents weren't alive, and your great-grandparents weren't alive. You were not even a concept. You did not exist. You were not some soul like the Mormons teach, wandering around heaven, some spirit waiting for someone to have a body down here so you could come down here. You did not exist. I did not exist. And then I told you that in 1516, Desiderius Erasmus culminated the Greek New Testament. And he put that together. But it's a real shame that I wasn't there. I could have helped him. And then in 1517, Martin Luther took what Erasmus had collated, that Greek New Testament, translated it into German, nailed his 95 theses to the door of the door of Wittenberg, and began what the world still knows as the Reformation. Man, I mean, that nail that put that 95 theses on the door of Wittenberg was like a stake in the heart of the power of the Roman Catholic Church over Europe. And Europe broke free of the Roman Catholic Church. The Reformation crossed the English Channel into England. England broke free of the Roman Catholic Church. And then it crossed the Atlantic and came over here. Now, guys, we are not Protestants, and we are not part of the Reformation, but we are still beneficiaries of that Reformation. Our nation never would have been the free Christian nation that it is had Rome had its stranglehold on Europe and on England as it once had. Guys, but when it happened, I wasn't there. And you weren't there. We weren't around. There was another war. I gotta tell you. Well, there's two wars. There was a revolution. I'm for it. You know, I just can't get on Christians go, you know, America started with the rebellion. And rebellion's always of the devil. Oh, really? How about this one? God sends a prophet to a guy named Jeroboam and said, I'm going to give you ten tribes, and he's going to rebel, didn't he? Almost like God was in a rebellion. And this nation was founded. Listen, I want you to know something about our country. Back there on the table is a little booklet called We Are Americans. You ought to get one. And it tells, you know what the greatest thing that Patrick Henry ever said was? No. Not give me liberty or give me death. You think that's the greatest thing he ever said? Because that's the only thing you know. You don't even know a second thing he ever said. I think give me liberty or give me death is the second greatest thing that Patrick Henry ever said. But the greatest thing he ever said, and it's recorded back there in that booklet, he said, it cannot be emphasized too strongly or too often that this great nation was founded not by religionists, but by Christians, not on religions, but on the gospel of Jesus Christ. Do you understand that you live in the single only country in history that ever chose the God of the Bible at its inception? You say, what about Israel? Israel didn't choose God. God chose Israel. And they are still God's chosen people, okay? One of these days, the Gentiles will be set aside. God is going to deal with Israel again. But think about this, people. Only Israel and the United States. You know where these two countries are unique? They both have the same God. And both of them have no heathen history. They have no pagan history. You can look at England. You can call it a Christian nation today. It's about to become a Muslim nation. But you can go far enough back in English history, man. You've got the Roman Catholic Church running it. Before that, you got the Druids and all that weird stuff that goes on. You go into Europe and you say, well, that nation, you know, turned to God under the Reformation. And that nation turned to God under the Reformation. Yeah, but they came from paganism. Only this country ever chose the God of the Bible. This is the only nation. Now listen carefully. Every nation in this world was pagan and had to be Christianized. This one is Christian and has to be paganized. And the mission of public education and higher education is to turn you and your children into pagans. And that is exactly what they're trying to do. And that was free because that wasn't even in the message. Maybe some of the internet needed that. I hope you got it. But guys, there was a revolution, but you were not there. And I was not there. And then after that, there was another war. It was called the Civil War. And I know where California was on that. But at least you guys aren't idiots about it. I mean, I just can't get over Southerners. You know, before I got saved, I lost a lot of fights, but I never bragged about it for 150 years. Hey, let me tell you about the guy that broke my nose. I mean, you know, I just don't ever find anybody boasting about losing one. And the Southerners go, say, well, the South will rise again. Well, we're with you again. Now look, let me tell you how the North and the South look at the Civil War. You know how the North looks at the Civil War? They don't. They couldn't care less. It's over. So if everybody played by our rules, including those good brethren in the South, nobody would mention it. But the South, these guys always got their thumb in their mouth. You know, we need to, in the States, rise, and, you know, if there'd be two great nations, no, there wouldn't. There'd be a United States of America here. I mean, it would be a United States of Europe over here. Because the South was one country and the North was another country, and a bunch of states that came in would never come in. The South was getting ready to split during the Civil War. And so I decided if they're not going to play by my rules and forget about it, I'm going to play by theirs. I'm having a ride. I go down South and I tell them, I said, I'm here because they told me you need a representative from the winning side. I have a cell phone, And it's a new cell phone. It really bothers me because it doesn't ring like my last cell phone. You know how my last cell phone rang? When it rang, it played Dixie. I like that. I was in a meeting someplace, and my cell phone went off and started playing Dixie. And this preacher friend of mine, I'm sure he goes, "I thought you're further north." I said, "I am." He said, "Then how come your cell phone plays Dixie?" I said, "Man, we won. It's ours now." I was talking to a preacher friend of mine. He was a pastor in Mississippi, and we were talking on the phone, which I was really glad he could use one. But and this was back before our oldest son got married. And he knew John. He's asking how John is. And I said, "John's getting married." He said, "When?" I said, "He's getting married April 26th. I said, "That's the day before my birthday." He goes, "Is your birthday April 27th? I said, "Yep." I said, "You know, that's the birthday of another great American." He said, "Who?" I said, "Ulysses S. Grant." He goes, "He's just got drunk." I said, "Well, he whipped you." Now, look, if you're here tonight, you guys, and you lost a fight, if you lost a fight to a 4'2" drunk, you don't brag about it. Right? You don't disparage the guy that whipped you. I mean, the guy whipped you, and he'll go, the guy comes in with armor sling, I go, "What happened to you? It was a one-armed, one-leg, 4'2" drunk." No, you say, "Oh, big, brothers, many. You know, I couldn't even count them all that hit me." That's what you do. And so he goes, "It was just a drunk." I said, "Well, he whipped you." And he goes, "You know what would have happened if he had sobered up?" I said, "Yeah, the war would have been over sooner." I was preaching in Tennessee, and I was reading out this, I think we got it back there, a little yellow bordered booklet. And it's what some outstanding individuals have said about the Bible. And there's a quote in there by Robert E. Lee. "I believe Robert E. Lee was saved. I believe Stonewall Jackson was saved. I believe that Jeb Stuart was saved. I believe that the South was a little more Christian, even today, than the North is. I don't dislike Southerners. I just, you know, if we're going to fight the war, we just may as well, let's all enjoy it." And I'm reading some quotes by these guys saying things about the Bible. And I said, there's even a quote in here by Robert E. Lee. And when I said that, the preacher sitting like right where your preacher is, he leaped to his feet, stood at attention, put his hand over his heart. Oh, yeah, here it is. "Okay, Ulysses, you win. Here's my sword." He goes, "Oh, I got him with a sword." Hey, guys, look, you can complain all you want that I'm from Ohio, who was the winning side. But you weren't there when it happened. There's not a person breathing right now, not you, not your father, and not your grandfather. You could maybe tell me that your great-great or great-great-great-grandfather fought in the Civil War, but I'm telling you that when the Civil War was fought, you weren't around, your parents weren't around, you didn't exist, you weren't a thought, you weren't part of anybody's plan of life. I mean, we did not exist. Isn't that true? Look at how much God got done in over 6,000 years without you and me around here. I'm amazed. And then you know what happened? We showed up. Now, I'm a believer that life begins at conception, but you'll excuse me if I count our life at our birthday. And so the day came when you and I showed up, and now here we are. But you know what you are? You know what I am? We are a walking, talking piece of dirt. You know what impresses me? This God that we have, this God that wrote this book that spoke the universe into existence, this God has so much power, he can pile dirt up, breathe into its nostrils a breath of life. It doesn't get life. It becomes a living soul. There are animals that have life, but they are not a living soul. Do you understand? This God can breathe into dirt in its nostrils, and it not only gets life, but it becomes a living soul. Now, forgive me for using this reference, but pretty good trick. And if God stopped there, that was enough. Isn't that? Pinocchio would have been happy if he got that far. Correct? But you know what this God did then? Here's this, me, walking, talking, dirt ball. And this God let his only begotten son die so that he could purchase this piece of dirt. So that now I stand here as a walking, talking piece of dirt that is bound for heaven where I'm going to spend eternity with my Creator. Is that where you're headed? Man, if you trusted Christ, are you not a walking, talking piece of dirt that has been bought by the blood of the only begotten Son? And now here, you walking, talking piece of dirt, you're going to spend eternity in heaven with your Creator? Is that not true? Okay, now guys, look, I don't care how you cut it, that's good enough for me. But it wasn't good enough for him. Because during this divine transaction where I went from son of the devil to son of, from lost to saint, I went from son of the devil to son of God. Now, let me tell you what I do. I pray every day, and I say this to my Creator. It is a piece of dirt speaking to its Creator, and I say, Father. You know that for 20 years I called Him Father, and for 20 years it wasn't true. But now when this piece of dirt talks to its Creator, I am talking to my Father. I am amazed. Are you not amazed? Man, you ought to be impressed with that. So here you are, and here I am, and you know we are? We are now bound for heaven. Isn't that true? I mean, with every tick of the clock, with every beat of your heart, look, you are going to be closer to heaven when this service is over than when we began. Isn't that right? And so, guys, here we are. One of these days, we're going to head into eternity. You are going to go to heaven one of two ways. Either the Lord will tarry His coming, and as He tarries, one by one by one, we will leave this earth through death in some way, and we will enter heaven. Or He will come back in the blessed hope and take us out of here before the tribulation. He'll take us out of here all at once, correct? It doesn't matter which one of those two you experience. The end result is you end up in heaven. Isn't that right? All right, now here's what I want you to think about. And I think I used this illustration here in a message, but it's a different message. But I want to use the illustration again because it bears repeating, because it really puts across what I would say. If we could take and go from that wall to that wall, if we could take, stretch out 2 million years of eternity, and we take a thumbtack and pin it to that wall, and over that wall, it's 2 million years of time. That would put this 1 million years right here, right here. You know what's right here? Right here is this little 7,000-year parenthesis that we now know is time. And in that 7,000-year parenthesis, do you know how much you get? 70 years. Right? You get 70 years. You say, well, I know somebody lived longer. Yeah, but the warranty's up at 70. It's harder to get parts, trust me. So now on just the scale of 2 million from that wall to that wall, and you've got this little hiatus in eternity that is a mere 7,000 years wide. And in that 7,000 years, on this scale, you get 70 years. You know what your 70 years looks like? The edge of that piece of paper. I mean that piece of paper is 70 years thick. You are born, live, and die in the thickness of that piece of paper. Do you understand that? And I hate to say this, but a bunch of us are more than halfway across this. I hate to split paper. But here you are, guys. Now, you know what this is? On just this little scale, this is the blink of an eye. This is the flash of a camera. This is what the Bible calls a vapor. Isn't that right? And so one of these days, we're making our way across here, and we're going to get to this side, and we're going to enter heaven. Don't you look forward to heaven? Man, I mean, I look forward to heaven. I look forward to seeing it. Now, I've always thought this. You know what one of the worst things could happen to a person? To be like some old Methodist or something that got saved and never learned any Bible. I mean, just they got saved and probably forgot about that. And die like in a car wreck with a King James Bible-believing independent Baptist who knows the whole book in and out. Can you imagine those two heading for heaven? I mean, I can see the Methodist going, wow, look at those gates. Those gates look like, they look like pearl. Of course they're pearl. Do you know they're pearl? Well, you see these things? Oh, this thing in the back, this thing in the side, there's 12 of them. Oh, wait. You see those colors there in the foundation? I memorized those when I was in Sunday school when I was a kid. Hey, you see this street? This ain't plexiglass, buddy. Isn't that right? I tell people, I said, you're stepping in here. Hey, you, hey, you're the four faces. Come here, I want you to meet my friend. My favorite verse in the Bible, you know what it is? It's Revelation 10:4. You know why? It says that John was about to write, and God said, don't write. He said, well, let me write. How much did I thought? Don't write. Well, why don't you let me write? Because if you write that down, then Baptists will preach it, and then they'll think they know the whole Bible. Isn't it going to be nice to get into heaven and find out something for the first time? Can I just see this guy? Yeah, that's a cherubim, that's seraphim. Jeremiah, fly, how they fly. Two wings flying, two wings cover their face, two wings cover their feet. And then, whoa, what's that? Man, I read Buckley's Revelation commentary. I never read about that. Guys, we're headed for heaven. I look forward to seeing the cherubim and the seraphim and the angels and the watchers and all and the loved ones who have gone before and the fellow Christians. I look forward to seeing the Lord. You look forward to seeing the Lord. Piece of dirt. Piece of dirt gets to get down and fall on its face before its creator. You know, I'm going to tell you this. You're going to think I'm joking. I'm not. You know one of the things I look forward to about heaven? The smell. I know what you just said. I never thought of that. I told you. Oh, wait a minute. How do you know heaven has a smell? Doesn't earth? Let me ask you a question. Is this earth cursed? Come on, guys. Is this earth cursed? Okay, now, on this cursed earth, have you ever stepped out on a spring night and just the smell had a good, the air had a good smell to it? I'm not talking about the smell of flowers. I'm not talking about the smell of blossoms or anything. I mean, there's something about the smell, like the smell after rain or something. I mean, on a sin-cursed earth, it can have a good smell. Don't tell me heaven doesn't have a good smell. I've always thought it's a cross between fried chicken and a grilled steak myself. Now, here's what I want you to think about. You got this little period of time right here. When we get on this side of paper right there, this is the beginning of your eternity. And by the way, when I said a million years ago, I don't believe there was a million years ago, okay? I'm just saying for the sake of the illustration. But you do believe in a million years from now, isn't that right? I mean, you're going to be in heaven. In fact, I know how long it's going to take you to get to that wall, a million years. But aren't you going to be in heaven longer than that? Yeah. Think about this. You're going to be in heaven more years than Obama spent dollars. I mean, probably two or three Brazilian. But anyway, that's our prayers. Now, when we get to this side, are you going to have to worry about your rent, health, taxes, disease, mother-in-law? She's going to be there. Heaven's a big place. Still might be a chance. My mother-in-law was in a movie. She really was, yeah. House fell on her sister. Anyway, you'll get it. Anyway, let me ask you this. Are we going to be praising God when we get over here? Aren't we? And won't we be saying good things about God? Let me ask you this. Won't we be praising Him perfectly? Without a problem? You know one of the things I look forward to in heaven? I won't be able to hurt Him by accident. See, I think, here's what I think I'm talking to. I think I am talking to a group of people who, I know what the Bible says about you, but I think I'm talking to a group of people who, to the best of their ability, are trying to live to the glory of this God. And as you have been attempting to live for Him and be a testimony of Him, haven't sometimes, I don't mean you go out of town and live some secret life and do evil things. I mean, hasn't there been a time when your flesh just got the best of you and you hurt Him by accident? Man, when we get on the other side, we will be able to hurt Him by accident. Now, let me talk to you about this 70 years, because, see, here's our problem. We think 70 years is a long time. Do we not? Oh, man, that's 70 years. Whoa. Look, just from here to that wall? This is not much time. This is kind of like going to school. You remember going to school? I thought this. Hey, 12 years is a long time, is it not? And for some of us, 13 or 14. But, here's what I thought. I thought you go to school when you're 6 years old, you start the first grade, and 12 years later you graduate, and at 18 you die of old age. Because that's a lifetime. 12 years is a lifetime. When I was in school, I thought I would be in school forever. I thought it would be my entire life. You know what happened last year? Last year, 2008, my graduating class of 1968, high school graduating class, celebrated its 40th anniversary, or 40th reunion. Now, what that means is, I graduated from high school in 1968, and when I graduated, some kid that fall started first grade, 6 years old, went 12 years and graduated, and when he graduated, some other 6 year old started first grade and went 12 years and graduated. When he graduated, some other kid started first grade, he went 12 years and graduated. When he graduated, some other kid started first grade, and he's now in the fifth grade. I have been out of school more than three times as long as I was in. Do you understand? Let me ask you, 70 years. Make it 100 if you want. You going to be in heaven three times longer than that? 300 years? Are you? You going to be there like 3,000? Like 3 million? Like 3 Brazilian? I mean, really, guys, you know what this is? This is the blink of an eye. I'm going to say this, and again, you'll laugh, but I mean it. Forgive me for how I think, but I imagine having an interview with an acorn. I bet you never thought of that. I bet some of you are glad, too. But anyway, I just imagine I'm going to interview an acorn. I walk out there, here's this great big old oak tree, and out here, you know about, there's the trunk of it over at the wall. Over here's this acorn. I say, how you doing? Oh, man, I'm doing better. What a day. Oh, what's the matter? I mean, you look fine. Oh, yeah. I wasn't here this morning. Well, where were you? Yeah, about 30 feet up in that limb. Right next to my good buddy, Bill. What are you doing? Just hanging around. Well, what happened? Squirrel. Well, what did he do? He was going to eat us alive. Well, what did you do? I jumped. I must have hit five limbs on the way before I landed down here. Well, what happened to Bill? I can still hear him screaming. Now look, this thing is the size of my thumbnail. And it thinks that that's what it's supposed to be. And it's not supposed to be that for even 1 year. Because it somehow gets pushed down into the soil. And the soil nurtures it and the rain waters it. And it takes root and it becomes a little sprig. And then it becomes a little sapling. Could you imagine interviewing that same acorn 100 years later? I mean, I think it'd be around 100, 150 years. We go back 100 years later. Hey, how you doing? Hey! So what are you doing? I'm just here. Anything new? Hey, had a little storm. What happened? Yeah, blew some deadwood out. Something like a Baptist church. We're always better for it. Hey, you still got a lot of acorns? Yeah, sure do. You remember when you were an acorn? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember. You remember when that squirrel came after you? Oh, yeah, I remember. Bill. You sure that squirrel? Yeah, now I got him living in me. You know what I'm telling you? If you could talk that acorn, it would think that that's what its existence was all about. But that was like school. That was just the beginning. That was preparation for what it was supposed to be all of its existence. Guys, this 70 years is school. This 70 years is a beginning. This is not your life. This is not for you. And I'm not saying you got to live a horrible life and not enjoy life. But we're not here so that this can be the best portion of our existence. This is the shortest portion of our existence. Now, I'm going to tell you what your one chance is. When we get on this side, we're going to praise God naturally, correct? You are going to be praising God, starting with your death or the rapture. You're going to be praising God perfectly for eternity, right? You aren't going to have a drink. You aren't even going to be tempted. Isn't that true? You're not going to do anything wrong because you won't be able to. Then I can't help but think that during this blink of an eye, when we praise God, it's of our own free will. I'm not complaining like, oh, I'm going to give up my free will. Well, you're going to give up your free will when you go to hell, bucko. I mean, heaven or hell, you give up your free will. You go to heaven by a free will decision, or you go to hell by a free will decision. You go to heaven by going to the cross and taking the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, or you go to hell by going to the cross and saying, I don't want it. And both of them are free will decision. But when we go to heaven or hell, there's no more free will. You know what I can't help but think then? Don't you think this, when we do something for God in this little vapor, this blink of an eye, this flash of a camera, when we don't have to, don't you think this might have some special significance to the Lord?
Yeah.
Some special value? You know what I'm supposed to say as a preacher? I'm supposed to say that if you leave church and never come back, God's going to, you know, break your back, kill your kids, burn your house. You know, He might not. He might give you a good job, let you do just fine. And you will have wasted your one chance. And one day you'll breathe your last and you'll get on the other side and you will have wasted this single opportunity that you had. Isn't that true? Guys, I mean this. I love being in church on Saturday night. I love having meetings on church night, or on nights that are not regular church nights. Some of you have been in every single one of these services. Some of you came here to these services. I'm telling you, you can't have this group, this other group, without somebody coming here sick, somebody coming here in despair, somebody upset about something, and you came to church anyway. Guys, I think that very act, in this one opportunity, I think that very act is worship to our God. And you will never have that opportunity. What I'm telling you is you will never have, once we get on the other side, you will never have the opportunity to be shortchanged for God. I told you about that fella that I worked for when I got saved doing body work, and he wanted to sell me that body shop. And I said, no. Man, that's all I ever wanted. I wanted my own body shop. I said, no. You say, why? Because I got a chance in this little blink of an eye to give up something I wanted so bad. Man, more than anything in the world, I wanted my own shop. And I gave it up. You say, why? For Him. Do you understand? I will never sacrifice anything in eternity for Christ. There's no way we can sacrifice. There's no way we can say, that's what I'd like to do, I'm not going to do it. There's no way I can say, I don't want to go to church tonight, but I'm going to go because of Him. Guys, could I give you some advice? Come to church every time the doors are open. Come here when you're angry. Come here when you're sick. Come here when you're sad. Come here when you're scared. Come here when your favorite show is going to be on and you're going to find out how the miniseries ends. And don't tape it. Just come. You say, well, I'll never know. That's right. You'll shortchange yourself. But don't you think maybe He's been a little shortchanged for us? Guys, this is our opportunity. This is the one chance we have. I told you, maybe it was back there, we were talking about Evander Holyfield. I believe Evander Holyfield saved man. I believe he got saved. I've heard him give his testimony. I saw his two fights with Tyson when he TKO'd him in the 11th round in the first one, and in the second one when Tyson sucker munched him. Now, look, one of these days, one of two things going to happen to Evander Holyfield. He's going to die, or the Lord's going to come back, and when He comes back, Holyfield goes up too, correct? I wouldn't doubt. I mean, from here to that wall, a million years, I'll bet you see him. I'll bet you run into him. Can I give you a little challenge? When you see Evander Holyfield in heaven saying, aren't you Evander Holyfield? Well, yes, I am. You know what Evander Holyfield did that no one else did in history ever? Evander Holyfield won the heavyweight championship belt 4 times. Some guys have won it 3. No one ever won it 4. Only Evander Holyfield. Say, you won the heavyweight belt 4 times, didn't you? Well, yes, I did. Hey, could you do me a favor? Sure, I'll be glad to. Show me one of those belts. You know what Evander Holyfield's going to say? I can't. Then let me bring it in. I do not dislike Evander Holyfield. Man, I feel sorry for him. You know why? Because he had one chance to live to the glory of the Savior that bought him with His blood. And instead, you know what he did? He wasted his life on himself. Can I give you some advice? Don't waste your life on you. Anybody here ever been to Hawaii? Okay, now, of you who went to Hawaii, how many of you went to the top of Diamond Head? All right. God bless you, brother. Brave man. You were based in that base by chance. Okay. If you go to Hawaii, you're going to fly into Honolulu International Airport. As you land in the airport, just south of that is Honolulu Beach. Just south of that is Waikiki Beach. And then off in the distance, you'll see kind of a lopsided mountain. Well, it's not really a lopsided mountain. It's an extinct volcano. And you know, you think of the crater of a volcano, like maybe being as big as this room. Mm-mm. The crater of this volcano is 1 mile across. That's extinct. But you know what's right in the middle of that volcano? A United States Army base. They put it there for this reason. They put it there in World War II for when the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. The United States was afraid that the Japanese would now invade Hawaii, and so they set up some guns on the backside of the wall of that caldera, and on the side facing the Pacific, they put this army base dead center. And then on the side of the outside wall of that crater, they put these things. They look like pillboxes, great big concrete things with slits, but there's no guns in them. Those guys were just watching the Pacific. They're watching. You know what they're watching for? They're watching for this little thing that looks like a hare coming up over the horizon, the mast of a Japanese battleship. And then they would call, and they would begin to give the coordinates for the artillery to fire on those Japanese ships. If you go to Hawaii, you can go to Diamond Head, you can go to those observation points. Now, I'm going to tell you something, guys. This is not for the faint of heart or faint of body. You know, one time we were someplace, our youngest son, Luke, he was very, very little, like 3 or 4, I can't remember, maybe 4 or 5, and going up these steps, and he says, are we there yet? My legs are out of breath. And trust me, if you go up top of Diamond Head, your legs will get out of breath. Here's what you do. To go up the top of Diamond Head, you drive up this road, you wind your way up the side of this mountain, and then you drive through a huge tunnel. Well, what you're doing, here's the floor of the crater, there's the wall, and that floor runs straight out through that tunnel runs straight on out. So you come through this tunnel, you drive a half mile in, and you park, and now you're at this army base. Now you got a half a mile to walk to get to the inside wall of the crater. Halfway there is concrete, about halfway there, and I don't think change this, but you go another half, the other half is gravel. First time I went up Diamond Head was 1990. I was preaching in the Philippines. On my way back, Kathy came in from the mainland. We met in Hawaii. I had a meeting in Hawaii, and so we needed 3 weeks to acclimate ourselves. And we did a little work with an environmental group called Save the Beach. And I've been known to literally throw my body on that sand to save it from the sun and the wind and the rain. But anyway, so we went up to Diamond Head, you know. And now, once you get to the edge of the crater, then there's kind of like scaffolding. It's just a series of steps. And you go up a couple of these, and then it goes right up against the inside wall of the crater. Now you start walking this little path. And you're back and forth, up the inside of this wall of this crater. Now you come to another tunnel, but this is not a car tunnel. This is a people tunnel. So it might be as wide as a pole. It might be about this wide. And I am sure during World War II there were lights in it. But when I was there in 1990, and then we were there, I hate to tell you this, guys. I've not only gone up to Diamond Head once. You ought to go once. We've gone up twice. Once you can be proud of. Twice, it's like, why would you do that twice? You're ashamed after twice. But anyway, so there's no lights in this tunnel. I mean, it is where you cannot see your hand in front of your face. Now, I know what you just said. Well, I'll just look for the light at the end of the tunnel. No, you won't. Because the tunnel has a little dog leg. So you can't see around the corner, and you can't see light. But as you're coming up Diamond Head, on the right side of the wall, there's a rail screwed to the wall. You say, well, then I'll hold on to the rail. So will you and everybody that's coming down from Diamond Head. So you got these people literally in the dark. One guy's holding on the rail going this way, and one guy's holding on the rail going this way. And I mean, it's like a train wreck. Here's what you hear in that tunnel. Oops, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, pardon me. Say, oops, yeah, so, oh. That's what you do. When you get through, you are bruised, you are battered, and you've lost your watch. When you get through, you are standing at the foot of a flight of steps. The average flight of steps in a house is 13 steps. This is 99. And they're like, they're not like this. They're like almost like a ladder. I mean, whoever put these in was a sadist. So now you walk up these. I'll tell you, I'm sure somebody else had to have the idea, because I stood there, looked those steps, and I looked back, and I thought, I'm going back. And I thought, no, I came this far, I'm going to go. So up the steps you go with all these people coming down. When you get to the top of steps, you're not there yet. You're in the basement. Now you've got to go up a spiral staircase while other people are coming down it. Now you're in this big old room where it was the observation room. That's not where you stay. You know what you do? You literally crawl on your hands and knees out through the slit, out onto the outside surface of Diamond Head. You say, I bet then you look at everything. No. You can always tell the people who just got there, they're all like this. They're trying to put their lungs black in their back in their mouth. And so, if you don't die real quick, and look, here's the kick. There's no water. There's no food. You could sell bottles of water for $10. If you could have a Burger King franchise, you'd be rich in a year. Oh, Whopper, $25? Sure, no problem. Coke, $50? No problem. So once you get your wind back, then you look at, now, it is a beautiful view. Man, you can look down on the Pacific. You can see the Big Island of Hawaii. You can see Waikiki Beach and Honolulu. Watch the planes land in Honolulu. You spend about 8 hours. There's not that much to see, but when you work that hard to get up there, you're not real in a hurry to go back down. So they finally tell you, you gotta go back down. You crawl back through the slit, back down the spiral staircase, back down the 99 steps, through the tunnel. You go, oh, pardon me, shit. And when you get through, you are beaten and you are bruised and you are battered, but you have a new watch. You wind your way back and forth, down the inside of this thing, back onto the scaffold, back onto the gravel, back onto the concrete, back to your car, and you say, I'll never do that again. Did we take pictures? First time we went, we've been up there, we're coming down, and I'll tell you where we're at. Now, you understand, when you're headed back to your car, you're in a long line of people who have just been up Diamond Head, who have enjoyed the view and also experienced the physical part of going up and down Diamond Head. So you're walking to your car, and you're passing a long line of people who are going up with this innocent, I'm going to Diamond Head. We are right where the gravel ends and the sidewalk begins, and I see a guy all by himself. He's headed up Diamond Head. I would say, I can't tell how old he was, but he was somewhere at least around 1,000. The guy was as big around as that flagpole. He had one of those canes that had four prongs, and he would plant it and then walk up to it. And he's looking like, I think what he's saying to himself is, beat heart, you know. And he goes this. This guy's just trying to stay alive. He's going to Diamond Head. I wanted to go again just to watch. Man, anyway, I don't think there's a man here who would let that guy go past you and not warn him of what's happening. And so I stopped him and I said, look, Pop, I said, let me tell you what is ahead of you. He's just now where the pathway is gravel, and that is going to be a little unsteady. Then you've got to go up these scaffold, then that thing, then through that the tunnel and 99 steps? No way. No way. Unless they tie a rope around him and haul him up there by helicopter, he ain't going. And so I told him every single thing. He's going to crawl through the viewing slit. Are you kidding? I told him everything's facing. This was a reaction. He went, thank you. I said, whoa, one more thing. What?
Can have your watch.
I guarantee you, half an hour, he won't need it. Now, I'm going to say this. I don't believe for a second, he made it. He didn't make it. I don't believe for a second that he thought he could make it. So why keep going? Man, I pondered that for a long time. I think it was 2 or 3 years. Light came on. I was talking to Kathy. I said, babe, I said, remember that old guy going up Diamond Head? And he just kept on going. And there's no way. I'm telling you, this man could not make it up Diamond Head. And I said, he kept on going. I said, I think I figured out why he kept going. She said, why? I said, if he'd have made it up there, wouldn't have been his first time. I'll bet you he was up there when he was about 20 years old in his prime, when he was wearing his army uniform, when he was stationed at that base, and he was watching the Pacific. I bet you he remembers with the guys replacing the watch, running up that path, seeing who could knock each other down, be the first guy up there, running up the 99 steps, running up there. I bet you when he mustered out of the service at the end of the war, I bet he said this, one of these days I'm going to come back here, I'm going back up Diamond Head. And he came back over here. He said, well, what do you reckon happened to him? A four-letter word, life. Oh, I don't think anything bad happened to him. He got married, got a job, had kids, put him in school, put him through college. I mean, there was just no convenient time to say, I'm going to stop now and go up Diamond Head. Maybe they're all grown. Maybe the wife is dead. And this old guy said, you know, I'm still alive. I'm going to go up Diamond Head while I can. I think he waited too long. You know how many young people I talk to, and they tell me what their plans are, and their plans are, you know, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to make $1 million, and I'm going to do all this. And then they say this, and they say this with a straight face. And then when I'm about 60 or 65, I'm going to retire, and I'm going to do something for God. Yeah, that's what I think you ought to do. I think you ought to use your health when it's at its prime. I think you ought to use it for yourself. When your mind is its clearest, when your eyes are their sharpest, when your back is its strongest, when you are at your best, go ahead and use it for what? For what? Extreme skiing? What are you going to use it for? Because I guarantee you, it won't compare to what you could do for God with it. So go out and use your body until your body is used up. And then bring the leftovers to God and say, I'm going up Diamond Head. I'm going to do something for God. And I'll tell you what you'll find out. You used it when it was its best. Now there's nothing left. I think that man waited too long. Guys, I am telling you, you and I have one opportunity, one chance to praise God. We have one chance to sacrifice. You have no idea how many guys, young people, they'll go, well, I'm not living for the Lord if I can't do this. If I got to do that, if I got to dress that way, if I got to, you know, give up this. This is the only chance you'll ever have to give up anything. This is the only chance you'll ever have. I'm not talking about sin. Do you understand? I am talking about a dream. I'm talking about your goal for your life. I'm talking about what you want so bad. I'm talking about something that you love. I am saying that this is the single only opportunity that you will ever have to give up something for God. Because once we get on the other side, you'll never have that opportunity again. And I just can't help but think that when God looks down at it, I can't help but when during this blink of an eye, this flash of a camera, this vapor, I can't help but think it's got to have some special value for God. Because you could. You know what you could do? You could walk out of this church and never come back and live good. I don't mean live, get drunk. You know, I'm not telling you you're going to end up in prison or divorce. You may do well. But you'll cross this paper too. And when you do, you are going to hate yourself. You are going to absolutely hate yourself. You think we preachers are hard on you? I know this isn't true, but I've often said that some Christians for the first 1,000 years in heaven, the first 1,000 years, you know what they're going to do? They're going to walk bent over. And every time they see somebody, they're going to say, please kick me. Because I wasted the only chance I had on me. You know what one chance is? There's a black truck driver. His name is John Hayes. He's 44 years old back in 1960. And on July 9th, 1960, he found out what one chance is. I have to ask you another question. Has anybody here ever been to Niagara Falls? Okay. Most likely, you went to the Canadian side. That is the best view of a falls. Plus, you get to see America in the background. And for you folks who have never been to Niagara Falls, when you go to the Canadian side, it starts over there at the United States, and it's kind of a double cataract. I didn't say, anyway. And it's a double cataract. And you know where Niagara Falls ends? You got this, you know, it's all kinds of tourists here, and it's all concrete, and a very stout iron railing. Niagara Falls doesn't start at the American side and come towards you and end at the back wall of the sanctuary. It's not that far away. It doesn't end halfway through this sanctuary. It does not end where this front pew is. If you can stand on the Canadian side and Niagara Falls ends at your feet, you can walk up, if you wait long enough, because there are somebody wanting to stand at that spot, but you can walk up and look right there as the water falls 150 feet into the abyss. You can stand right at, on the Canadian side, right at the edge of Niagara Falls. That is exactly where, on July 9th, 1960, that's exactly where John Hayes was standing. He thought he was going to visit Niagara Falls, but he was going to have one chance that day, and it's going to change his life. There was a drama taking place 1 mile above the falls that would alter his life forever. 1 mile above the falls was a little aluminum 18-foot boat. There were three people in it. There was a man by the name of James Honeycutt. James Honeycutt helped build some of the hydroelectric plants above the falls. Now, you know, you have to excuse me, I'm from the East. We have something you guys don't have, rivers. Oh, yeah, we have rivers. Well, ours have water. I just get a kick, you know. I mean, you make fun of our mountains, we make fun of your rivers. You guys need to get your rivers plumbed. I mean, you drive a Red River, and it's like a quarter of a mile, and there's not even a wet spot in the middle. So, you know, if you ever need a river, come east. But you know, most rivers, they're just kind of smooth, you know, we get a canoe and just kind of drift out. That's not the Niagara River. The Niagara River is, because of that water going over the falls, man, it is pulling that water down the Niagara River, and not waves, but just the chop. That water will jump 3 or 4 feet in the air. So that water's moving fast, so they put hydroelectric plants so that fast-moving water could turn turbines and generate electricity. And James Honeycutt had in that boat a brother and sister. He had 17-year-old Diane Woodward and her 7-year-old brother, Roger Woodward. And Honeycutt is showing them from the water view, the hydroelectric plant, where the water goes into the hydroelectric plant, and then what his part was. And he got in a little bit too close to shore, and the prop hit a rock, and it sheared the pin. And when that shear pin sheared, now that engine is spinning free, that prop is absolutely useless, and they are at the mercy of the Niagara River. But the Niagara River has no mercy. They are destined to go over the falls. You know what's going to happen. You say, they went over the falls in that boat? Oh, no, no. They never made it there in the boat. Long before they got to the edge of the falls, that water just literally pitched that boat straight up in the air, dumped all three of them into the river, and out of those three people are three entirely different stories. James Honeycutt went over Niagara Falls and was killed. Roger Woodward, 7 years old, wearing nothing but his bathing suit and a life jacket, went over Niagara Falls and lived. He didn't die. They don't understand why. They think maybe because he was little, the water threw him out. I mean, there are rocks the size of houses at the base of Niagara Falls. This kid missed it all. I've got a picture in my motorhome of this kid. They're fishing him out, the mate of the mist, down below the falls. They're fishing him out. He looks like he's just having a day at the beach. That leaves one more person. His sister's going to go over the falls, and she's going to die. But she's not going over out there. She's not going over where the back wall is, not where the middle pew, not even where this front pew is. You know where she's going? She is literally just scraping the edge. She is going to go over right at the feet of John Hayes. Now, I told you that river's moving fast. She is boom, boom, boom. She is headed for the falls. You know that across that, she is waving her arms. She is yelling for help. You know their eyes had to meet. And every man here has to know that in the worst way, John Hayes did not want that girl to die. He knew that he was the one chance she had to be saved. He wanted, in the worst way, people, to save that girl's life. He did not want her to die. And as she is moving, she's looking up at tourists. They're watching her. Her last moments of life, they can't do anything about it. I want you to know, John Hayes timed it as best he could. He timed it as best he thought. He watched her. She came closer, closer, closer. And when he thought he had timed it right, he leaned clear out over that railing, swept his arm down, and as she was at the edge of the falls going over, their fingers touched and locked. He hung on to her, pulled her up. Another guy grabbed her other arm. They pulled her over that railing and saved her life. You know what that is? That's one chance. You know what that is? That is the one opportunity that you've got. This is our one chance, guys. Do you understand? You young people, there's no reset. You know, it's not a computer game where if you lose, you just reset the game and get a new life. There's no instant replay. There's no way to, next time around. There's no next time around. There's no reincarnation. We are going to leave this planet through death or the rapture. You will never, ever again have the opportunity to be shortchanged for this God you say you love. You will never be able to come to church when you don't feel like it. You'll never be able to pass a gospel tract. You'll never have anybody rib you at work for being a Christian. It will never happen again. This is the only single one chance we have to do anything for Him of our own free will. Don't waste your life on you. I didn't say on the devil. I didn't say on sin. I said on you. the majority of Christians that are not living for God. They're not dopers. They're not strung out. They're not in prison. You know what they're doing? They're bowling. They're golfing. They're running to Disney World. They're laying out. Listen, summer's going to come here, and they'll be on that beach every Sunday. They'll never show up in this room.